Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
I am the greatest! He talks a great deal and brags indeedy of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. I am the greatest.
45 years ago today, on September 20th, 1972, the late, great Muhammad Ali stopped Floyd Patterson in the seventh round at Madison Square Garden in New York City. Patterson was a two-time world heavyweight boxing champion who died in 2006 at age 71, but he couldn't beat Ali, one of the most charismatic and controversial athletes in history. Patterson also lost to Ali in 1965. The second Patterson bout was one of eight fights Muhammad Ali had at Madison Square Garden. His most famous fight there took place the year before Ali Patterson II in 1971 when he lost to Smokin' Joe Frazier. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, VOA's Adam Phillips looks back on the epic first fight in the tremendous trilogy between Ali and Frazier.
Ali was ready to regain his world heavyweight title by fighting Joe Frazier. Smokin' Joe had earned the heavyweight title in elimination bouts after Ali's belt was stripped from him. The Ali-Frazier fight was touted as the fight of the century. It would determine which of those two undefeated champs could claim the belt. True to form, Ali played to reporters by taunting and insulting Frazier. Here's one example among many.
Joe Frazier is so ugly, his face should be donated to the Bureau of Wildlife.
Many thought Ali was angry at Joe Frazier, but that wasn't true in the opinion of Madison Square Garden photographer George Kolinsky. Kolinsky was a trusted friend who snapped photos of the fighter in public and behind the scenes for nearly 50 years. Many of those pictures are now on exhibit at the New York Historical Society.
When he talked about Joe Frazier, what he was really doing is being the showman, the performer, the entertainer to promote the fight. He said, if I sold tickets, then I did my work.
Prior to the fight, Kolinsky shot several roles of Ali and Frazier in Frazier's Philadelphia gym. In a first, Kolinsky asked them to put their heads together and to lock eyes in an attitude of barely contained fury. Then came the sparring.
And Joe hits Ali so hard in the stomach that Ali actually went down, and I couldn't believe this, that here I have my own fight going on with them. I start to help Muhammad Ali up, and he's looking at Joe Frazier, and he said, you son of a gun can really punch. And Joe Frazier looks at Ali, and he said, that's the way it's going to be the night of the fight. You're going down.
Indeed, Ali lost the so-called fight of the century marquee matchup in 15 rounds. It was the first defeat of his professional career. Undaunted, he then fought boxing great Ken Norton. Norton broke Ali's jaw, handing the erstwhile greatest a second stinging defeat. Again, Jeffrey Sammons of New York University.
And many people thought that that might be the end of Ali's career. And that's also the allure of Ali, that he's able to come back from the brink, from adversity. And he would beat Ken Norton in a rematch. And Joe Frazier would not give Ali a shot at the championship. And Joe Frazier loses his crown to George Foreman, who was enormous and hulking and just destroyed Joe Frazier in two bouts.
George Foreman, now the heavyweight champion himself, did accept Ali's challenge. Ali was heavily favored to lose. The boxing world readied itself for a colossal contest between the two men. It was set for Kinshasa in the former Zaire, now called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Ali called the contest the Rumble in the Jungle.
I think it was speaking to the historic role that Ali had played in terms of black nationalism, black pride.
Almost from the beginning, the African public favored Muhammad Ali over George Foreman. Sammons explains part of the cause.
George Foreman made the serious mistake of taking a German police dog with him to Zaire. And this dog symbolized oppression and white colonialism. So George Foreman became persona non grata. And there was this famous French chant by kids and others, Ali Bumbaye, Ali kill him.
In private, Ali lacked confidence. He spontaneously came to call on his friend, the photographer George Kolinsky, at his office.
And I said, "What's going on?" He said, "Well, I'm fighting George Foreman in Zaire. He's too big, he's too strong, he's too fast, he's too young, he's too quick, he's too big. There's no way I can beat him in this fight."
Kolinsky says he thought about it for a moment, then came up with a strategy that would become an Ali hallmark.
I said, "You know, Muhammad, all your life you've been training for this fight, but you didn't know it. Whenever I saw you working out, which are many, many times working out in a gym with your sparring partner, what you do is you lean against the ropes and you let your sparring partner hit you and hit you and hit you. What you do the night of the fight is the same thing. You lean against the ropes, just let them swing away, and you act like a dope on the ropes, like you're sick, like you're not well. And eventually he's going to tire himself out. Then you knock him out." He said, "You mean you want me to be a rope-a-dope?" I said, "Okay, we'll call it rope-a-dope." And that's what happened when he fought George Foreman.
The fight took place in a football stadium under the moon. It was a brutal contest, but Ali sent Foreman to the floor in the eighth round and reclaimed his heavyweight title. As ecstatic fans streamed to the ring, the commentator, David Frost, crowed, "The great man has done it. This is the most joyous scene in the history of boxing." Basking in this victory, Ali was invited to the White House to meet President Gerald Ford, a clear sign of Ali's rehabilitation in official eyes. But there were more challenges to come. Most famously, there would be Ali's epic rematch against Joe Frazier in October 75 in Manila, the Philippines. During the build-up to what became known as the Thriller in Manila, the animosity between the two men was electric.
"In a sharp poem, it says there will be a killer and a thriller and a chiller when I get the gorilla in Manila."
From the first bell, the men went at each other with unstoppable, constant, vicious energy. Ali finally won in the 15th round, but Jeffrey Sammons says both men paid a terrible price.
And Ali said about it that it was the closest thing to death that he had ever experienced or could imagine. And of course, we know that Ali had Parkinson's syndrome, which many believe was brought on by the brain trauma that he suffered.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Thanks, Adam. Muhammad Ali was known for his trash talk during his legendary career, but the current world heavyweight champion, Anthony Joshua, says that just isn't his style.
"I think it's a gentleman's sport. Let's rewind back years ago when they used to come wearing suits, double-breasted suits, to come to their press conferences and so on. It's been brought up around a gentleman's sport. And I think the trash talking isn't so much trash talking, it's more rhythm, flow, character, and all you can be is yourself. But then it comes to a stage where if I'm going to disrespect this person, then that person starts disrespecting the other one back, and then it becomes a bit more of a fight before the real fight, and we don't need to get into all that. I'm just here saying I know what I'm capable of doing, and he knows what he's capable of doing, and the best man's going to win. And that's why people make sure they wait until the 28th of October to come out and witness it live."
On the 28th of October, Anthony Joshua will defend his world heavyweight titles against Bulgarian boxer Kubrat Pulev in Cardiff, Wales. In more boxing news, former world middleweight champion Jake LaMotta died Tuesday at the age of 95. Born in the Bronx in New York City, LaMotta was nicknamed the Bronx Bull and the Raging Bull. He was portrayed by American actor Robert De Niro in the 1980 film Raging Bull, And for our VOA boxing fans checking their scorecards, De Niro won the Academy Award that year as Best Actor for that role. For his part, Jake LaMotta was known for having one of the greatest chins in boxing history. He was one tough fighter. LaMotta is also known for his epic six-fight rivalry against Sugar Ray Robinson, who died in 1989 at age 67. After 40 consecutive victories, Sugar Ray suffered his first professional loss to LaMotta in 1943 in Detroit, but he beat LaMotta in their five other bouts. Jake LaMotta, the Raging Bull, dead at age 95. The Sunny Side of Sports is sad to report the death of former heavyweight contender David Bay of the USA in a construction accident in Camden, New Jersey. Bay was 60 years old. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration says Bay was struck by a piece of metal while working on a real estate development project in Camden. David Bay is perhaps best remembered by boxing fans for his 1985 IBF World Heavyweight title fight against Larry Holmes. Holmes won by a 10th round technical knockout. In European club football, Barcelona star Lionel Messi is off to a bodacious start in Spain's La Liga. Messi scored four goals, count them, four goals Tuesday when Barca routed Eibar 6-1 to extend its perfect record to five wins and no losses in the Spanish league. Messi now has nine goals overall in league play. Italian striker Simone Zaza of Valencia is next with four goals. Elsewhere, Colombian star James Rodriguez has really stood out in his first Bundesliga start for Bayern Munich. The 26-year-old Rodriguez scored one goal and played a role in the others in Bayern's 3-0 victory at Schalke. Bayern has won four of its first five league matches and tops the Bundesliga table with 12 points. Borussia Dortmund is in second place with 10 points, and Dortmund will move to the top of the table with a victory at Hamburg later Wednesday night. Taking a quick look at the leaders in England and Italy, Manchester City and Manchester United lead the Premier League with 13 points each from five matches. Defending champion Chelsea is in third place with 10 points. And in Italy, Inter Milan leads with 13 points from five matches. Napoli and defending champion Juventus, which have each played four matches, have 12 points each. In African football, Ghana will host Niger and Nigeria will play Benin in Thursday's semifinals at the WAFU Cup of Nations tournament. Both matches will be played at the Cape Coast Sports Stadium in Cape Coast, Ghana. This tournament is for teams in West Africa, and with many of Africa's best footballers plying their trade right now in Europe, the coaches are relying primarily on locally based players. In results Tuesday, Benin defeated Niger 2-1, and Senegal and Ivory Coast played to a scoreless draw. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day. It will brighten our way if you keep on the sunny side of life.
All right, Roy.
Let us greet with a song of hope each day. Though the moments be cloudy or fair, let us trust in our Savior always to keep us everyone in his care.
So keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help you every day, it will brighten all the way, if you keep on the sunny side of life.
Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brilla FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brillafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Joining us once again here in Studio 22 is Andrew Palcheski, the VOA social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. Raging Bull, one of my all-time favorite boxing movies. I'm guessing the Raging Bull might be trending.
He is indeed. People mourning the death of Jake LaMotta at the age of 95. Of course, known for those series of fights against Sugar Ray Robinson, the inspiration for Raging Bull, as you mentioned, and former world middleweight champion. So quite an impressive resume that people are lauding as they celebrate his life. But I saw one social media post in particular that I wanted to bring up because I thought this was a great way to honor Jake LaMotta. The person wrote, "Rest in peace somehow doesn't seem appropriate for Jake LaMotta. You know, he's up there right now asking Sugar Ray for another go." So I think that's a nice way to remember him, thinking he's up there and he says, "All right, rematch, let's do this."
That's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
Jake LaMotta, the Raging Bull, born in New York City in the Bronx, also nicknamed the Bronx Bull. What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, a follow-up on a story that we talked about yesterday. We talked about the speculation surrounding Kevin Durant and his supposed secret Twitter account that he used to fight online criticism. Of course, he sent out that odd tweet that was in the third person. He then deleted that. There was also evidence of an Instagram account where it looked like he was operating secretly. Well, at a tech event in San Francisco yesterday, Durant finally spoke out. So he gave a very long statement there in this panel discussion, and he basically owned up to it. He said, "To know that I affected Billy Donovan and the Thunder, I love those people and I don't ever want to hurt them. This is just me being a total blanking idiot. I own up to it. I want to move on from it." And then he continues on. He said, "It was a joke to me at first. I was doing it all summer, and it went too deep. I went too hard." And then he acknowledges, he says, "I haven't slept in 2 days, 2 nights. I haven't eaten. It's crazy because I feel so upset with myself, and I'm mad that I brought someone into it." So a very strong words. It affected him very personally and a quite a deep level that this got out of hand. It's not clear whether this was a fake Twitter account or he was just trying to joke and respond as though it was somebody defending him, but it weighed on him pretty heavily. Now, he also addressed that Instagram account. He said that that supposed secret Instagram account actually was him. He said that he uses that account to communicate with friends in the NBA and family. He doesn't want to have a public account. He just wants to interact with them privately. So that was what that account was. He says he does not use that account to defend himself from haters. It's more of just a way to stay in touch with his folks in his immediate inner circle. fans are kind of still ribbing him for this, saying, well, it's kind of ridiculous that you thought you could defend yourself or try to be in the third person or have a secret account, whatever it is. But he's getting a lot of credit from others saying he owned up to it. He didn't say he was hacked. He didn't say it was someone broke into his account. He said it was him. He apologized for it. And so that speaks very highly to his character.
Andrew, we talked about this after the show on Tuesday, but do you get the sense that maybe some of these high-profile athletes should maybe have a social media account director, kind of like a PR director almost?
Yeah, and I think a lot of the high-profile athletes do. So it's interesting in this case that Kevin Durant doesn't for this personal account, although he may have one and just has access to the account as well on his own. But I think that image, especially on social media, has been a huge issue over the past few years that social media has grown. We've talked about that sports stars want to use social media to reach out to fans, and they do that very effectively, but it can always help to have somebody at the wheel there so you don't accidentally tweet out something or post something inappropriate or something that seems good at the moment, but you look back and say, hey, maybe that wasn't so great, as was the case for Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant getting ready for another season with the Golden State Warriors. The NBA season will be tipping off in just a few weeks. What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, we've been talking for months about Serena Williams. I mean, we've been talking about Serena Williams really since she came onto the tennis stage years and years ago. But on this show, we've been talking about her for months. And we've been talking about her pregnancy and how that's linked to social media. You know, first, Serena posted that message on social media saying that she was pregnant. Then she had a message for her unborn baby before she gave birth. After she gave birth, she posted that kind of video series that chronologically told the story of her pregnancy and the birth of her daughter, Alexis Olympia Ohanian Jr. And now Serena's going to Reddit, which coincidentally enough is co-founded by her fiance, Alexis Ohanian. And she writes a touching tribute to her mother and what it means to her now that she's a mother, how her mother, Oracine, supported her, and what it means to be a black woman. So she says that Dear Mom, you're one of the strongest women I know. I was looking at my daughter, and she has my arms and legs, my strong, muscular, powerful, sensational arms and body. A lot of people saying that line goes after Maria Sharapova. Maria Sharapova, in her recently released book, said that Serena Williams was imposing and muscular. So a lot of people saying that line is maybe a dig at Sharapova. But Serena goes on in this message to say that her mother was defended her. She's so proud of her class and her strength, and she was a great role model for her. She says, I'm not as sure as if I'm as meek and as strong as you are yet. I hope to get there one day. I love you dearly. So a really nice message that she's sending off, and a really nice look, you know, at the human side of sports. We see these athletes really as almost objects that are out there, whether it's on the basketball court or the soccer pitch or the tennis court. They're almost larger than life. So when you see a message like this put up online, it really humanizes them. And that's the case for Serena.
And that reminds me, Andrew, on a recent show, you talked about Sloane Stephens, the U.S. Open champion. And she has acknowledged the Williams sisters as role models for her inspiration. And yet after she won the trophy, she went up into the stands and thanked her mother for all her support over the years.
Yeah, you know, we see these athletes out there and sometimes in singular sports like tennis or boxing. But you do realize that there is a whole team around them that helps get them there.
We have about a minute left in the show. Andrew, anything else trending?
Yes, Sonny, a big anniversary today because it was on September 20th, 1973, 44 years ago, that Billie Jean King defeated Bobby Riggs in the Battle of the Sexes. Of course, huge part of tennis history, huge part of athletic history for women. And it's reacquainting itself with quite a lot of people today because later this week, the Battle of the Sexes movie will be coming out.
New movie.
Starring
okay.
Emma Stone as Billie Jean King and Steve Carell as Bobby Riggs. So a lot more attention on this. But 44 years later, we are still talking about the Battle of the Sexes, still talking about how Billie Jean King changed the face of sports for women.
Andrew Palcheski serving up some social media tidbits. Thank you, Andrew.
Thanks, Sonny.
And that wraps up the September 20th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. Department of the Treasury announced targeted sanctions on two South Sudanese government officials and one former official for their roles in threatening the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. Three companies that are owned or controlled by one of the officials were also sanctioned. The measures taken against Malik Ruben Riak Rengu, Michael Makui Lewith, and Paul Malong Awan make clear that the U.S. government will impose consequences on those who expand the conflict and derail peace efforts. The Treasury Department also released a Financial Crimes Enforcement Network advisory alerting U.S. financial institutions to the possibility that certain South Sudanese senior political figures may try to use the U.S. financial system to move or hide proceeds of public corruption. The United States stands ready to impose other measures against those responsible for undermining the peace, security, or stability of South Sudan. As the advisory demonstrates, the United States is committed to increasing scrutiny on those who enrich themselves through corruption, while the South Sudanese people suffer through economic hardship and a dire humanitarian crisis. 6 million people in South Sudan, half of the population, face life-threatening hunger, while more than 4 million people have been displaced from their homes, including 2 million refugees. This is a man-made crisis and one the government of South Sudan can stop, said State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. We continue to make clear to South Sudan's leaders that they must honor their declared ceasefire, revive the 2015 agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan by engaging meaningfully with opposition parties, bring an end to atrocities, stop the harassment of aid workers, stem human rights abuses, cooperate fully with the United Nations mission in South Sudan, and take action against corruption, said Ms. Nauert. The United States urges all parties to engage constructively in the upcoming South Sudan peace process.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 72nd United Nations General Assembly opens with a theme focusing on people, striving for peace and a decent life for all on a sustainable planet. Host Shaka Sali and his guest will discuss the UNGA's theme and its importance for the people of Africa. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.